This is Arnie Arneson, and this is the Tuesday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson, and producers Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. You know the drill? We record on Monday morning. We're going to start with a poem by our great poet Lynn Ekdahl. Catch and Kill is the title of her poem. They seem to have a lot of fun, just a game when said and done. Pecker's out there with his mitt to catch the next big juicy hit. Some little sin by his friend Don will keep his income moving on. Another woman, another song, claims the Don has done her wrong. He fields the story, pays the bill, and now the story he will kill. He'll be paid back by his friend Don. Another day, another con. And why not sling a bunch of lies, scandals to hurt the other guys? Ted Cruz's father's a Cuban spy. His wife and others likes to lie. Trump and Pecker sure can make and distribute news that's fake. They smile and rest upon their laurels. Rotten guys with rotten morals. Ooh, ooh, Lynn Ekdahl, you are so good. So we're being joined by Adam Finkel. Now, technically, Adam Finkel is a clinical professor of environmental health sciences at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. We've had him on numerous occasions. He joins us a lot on our Rethink the Week. And one of the things I always love about the fact that he is the dad of a 23-year-old daughter conceived in vitro, which makes him concerned about SCOTUS, you and me both, and the prospect of it going after IVF, which I think, unfortunately, we're going to sort of see that reality unless people decide to make change, both at the state level and ensure that there isn't a Donald Trump presidency. But the reason Adam Finkel is coming on today is that he wears two hats. He doesn't just teach at the University of Michigan. He doesn't just, I believe, live in New Jersey, but he also has a home just outside of Littleton, New Hampshire. And so that means that Littleton is like sort of the big city, if you can call it that, or the big town in northern New Hampshire that everyone in the North Country knows of, because that's where you go to shop, that's where you go to have entertainment, that's the great bookstore, that's got the great restaurants. And I will be honest with you, when you sent me this story, I was a little bit surprised that it was in the New York Times. And here was the title of the story: How One Reaction to a Mural Tore a New England Town Apart. The 6,000 residents of Littleton, New Hampshire, had found a way to coexist despite their differences until a town official's words set off a conflagration. So, Adam, as I was reading the story, it's brilliantly written. It reads like a little novelette, okay? It is such a sad story, but it's not just a story of Littleton. It's a story about what we've seen happening all over the country as a result of whether it's Moms for Liberty or some MAGA group or whatever decides that they're going to get involved in local government, not because they necessarily care about the well-being of the community, but because they want to move their political or religious agenda to the forefront and then make it everybody's agenda, whether it's at the public school or whether it's at the city council. And Adam, I used to, you know, I've served in the New Hampshire legislature, and then I ran for governor. And as I always tell people, even though I'm a liberal Democrat who is on her way to divinity school, I married a Republican libertarian atheist. So the idea of crossing boundaries is something I'm very familiar with, and frankly, something I'm very comfortable with. And I used to describe, Adam, New Hampshire as this way, that we were kind of a very libertarian state. But how did I define libertarian? That New Hampshire didn't trust big government or big church, all right? Really important. And the reason why this libertarian New Hampshire was something I was comfortable with was I also want to give people a sense of a little bit of the historical history of New Hampshire, which is why what happened in Littleton was so depressing and so shocking. New Hampshire was the first state in America to, by legislation, through a vote in the New Hampshire House and Senate, to embrace gay marriage. It didn't require a court. It didn't wait for the feds. It didn't wait for the Supreme Court. It embraced gay marriage as the first state in the nation, Adam, to actually embrace gay marriage through legislative action. And I think that that's really important. And then I don't know if you know this, Adam, although Jean Shaheen vetoed it, New Hampshire was also the first state, by Republicans, by the way, who repealed the death penalty. Okay, this is a Republican-controlled legislature, repealed the death penalty, and Governor Jean Shaheen, the Democratic governor, she vetoed it. So I just want people to get this sense of what do I mean by big government and big church, is that the death penalty and gay marriage really represent those things. And that is New Hampshire. And we lived together and coexisted and actually kind of admired each other. So, Adam, I want to welcome you to the program and refresh everyone's recollection about the story that is so well told in the New York Times about what happened when a select person decided that Littleton needed to look more like her Christian agenda than the way Littleton had always existed.
Well, thanks again for inviting me. So, yeah, crossing boundaries and a number of things coming together. First of all, I live in New Hampshire 7, 8 months a year. I have to retreat to New Jersey in the wintertime because my house is not heated. So that's my duality. My other duality is I'm Jewish by birth, observant to this day, but I went to an Episcopalian parochial school for 7 years. So I'm a singer in my second life. So I sing in church very, very frequently. So I'm fairly well versed in both traditions. And then the other thing is, just to make it clear, the subject of this story on page 12 of today's New York Times, was online yesterday, is Carrie Gendro, who was a select board member but continues to be one of the 24 members of the New Hampshire State Senate. So she's not just a local official, but a represents the entire northern third of the state. And she lost her didn't run for a select board seat, so now she's not anymore, but she continues to be in the Senate at least until November. So yes, you talk about a Christian agenda. So this select board slash senator last fall decided, and the pictures are in the Times online if people want to see it, but there are three small murals that were painted on a private building, a restaurant in New Ham in Littleton, and a triptych, and one of them was a daisy, a dandelion with pollen coming off. One was had a rainbow in it somewhere, and then the one that really got her was the flower, the iris. And she decided that the iris is a pagan symbol of the rainbow. It's really not clear. She changes her story once in a while, but basically, it's about gays, and she referred to homosexuality as an abomination, as twisted preferences, and cited both testaments, Old and New, for her views. And that's where I got involved because, I read the Torah in synagogue, and I again had this 7 years of daily chapel. It's in neither Testament. It's in the New Testament under the words of Paul, who'd never met Jesus, but not the Savior himself. And the Old Testament Leviticus is, been translated through three languages, and it really isn't what she thinks it is. It's a cult. It's a delusion. So it's not just imposing a religious agenda, but basically a made up non-biblical agenda. So yeah, the town, the headline is torn apart. I'm not sure the town is torn apart. I think the majority of people were appalled and stood up and elected a very different person to the select board in January, I believe. And Littleton will do fine. It's a wonderful town, but there is a vocal minority who, as you say, they're represent people all over the country who hate things, hate people, whether it's the so-called illegals trying to join the country and work hard, whether it's gays, whether it's transgender persons. It's a strong emotion, and it's everywhere. And in some cases, it's wrapped up in this Bible, but not the real Bible, somebody's mistranslation of it.
Let's describe this select person, because this is not a transplant. This is someone who's lived here her whole life. And I think it's really important. So she has lived in Littleton. And let me just sort of describe, read the article, everyone. It's just so well written, and it's just so sad. Miss Gendrew had grown up in a home where she was taught that God is the authority, she said in a recent interview. At her father's urging, she attended Bob Jones University, a Christian college in South Carolina, where she served as her sorority chaplain. After returning to Littleton, she worked in insurance sales, owned a clothing store on Main Street, and taught business classes at a local college. She sounds like a very, very sort of community-oriented person. She comes home to Littleton. All those things I can applaud. I mean, Bob Jones, you can go wherever you want to go to school, okay? No problem. When a town selectman suggested that she run for office, she said, "I was scared to death." But she had been taught to give back. Her father had been the town moderator for 56 years. That's just shocking, okay? But what happened ultimately was that when she came back, even though her father had been moderator for 56 years, you didn't see this tumult, Adam, when her father was moderator. Her father must have had a little bit of live and let live attitude, but his daughter, who goes to Bob Jones and returns, doesn't come back with a live and let live. It was live my way or the highway is really what she brought into her concept of public service, because she saw public service as a way to clean house. That's really what I saw. And the house that she wanted to clean out was a house that was accepting, a house that might have been more libertarian, a house that might have said, you know, there are LGBTQ people in our community, there are people that are non-religious in our community, and they can all agree to live together. But that, as a select woman, that wasn't what she wanted to see. She wanted to slap her religious identity on everything that sort of touched the community. And I think that's the part that was so scary. It had been, you know, understood that this was a 50-50 town. 50% of the people voted for Biden, 50% of the people voted for Trump. But guess what? You know, you played hockey together and you ate at the same restaurant. So it didn't matter until she shows up.
Exactly. And again, I think, I hope it was an aberration. I hope it was a bad year for Littleton that will be in the rearview mirror. But yeah, it's being replicated all over the country. And again, it's troubling to me because I'm a spiritual person. I have great respect for people whose religious beliefs prescribe certain things. I have my own view about abortion. I'm profoundly pro-choice and pro-life, as we've discussed on the show about in vitro and the anti-life agenda of people who would stop people like me from bearing children through science. But I have great respect for the people who believe that abortion is a sin, but imposing it upon everybody else is the problem. And then, of course, it's just doubly perverse by imposing a view that is not in any faith tradition. It's just concocted that gays are twisted, and you know, I don't even want to start repeating all of the things she said. She or her mother, by the way, wrote to me on social media during the first wave of this in the fall when I mentioned my views about what the two testaments actually say, and the quote was G quote Jesus will deal with the Jews in his own good time. So a very loving there is no hate like Christian love was one of the signs that I saw at one of the protests against Kerry. And let me just say one other thing about
Oh, of
electoral
course.
politics, which of course is replicated everywhere in the country this coming November. Kerry won her race against Edith Tucker from Randolph with a campaign of untruths about Edith. So the thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor commandment is probably not in her Bible.
Well, and let me just, she's also a state senator, as you mentioned, and she's still a state senator. And what I found absolutely fascinating was that when she served in the Senate, she had to sort of explain herself to the president of the Senate. And she said she's always made clear that she would serve God first and then the voters. Okay, let me just, this is a line, everyone, from the, I'm not making this up. This is in the New York Times. After her election to the state Senate in 2022 as a Republican, I told the Senate president, I will listen to my constituents, but if the Lord trumps the majority, I will go with that. She accepted that many of her legislative colleagues would not like it when she read from the Bible as she carried into debates. And she rejects the claim that it does not belong there. Our founding fathers said we have the freedom to worship. We do have the freedom to worship, but she is demanding that we worship her way, not our way. That's why there's a separation of church and state. She doesn't quite comprehend it. You have a separation of church and state actually to protect religion. More
Exactly.
so than to protect the state, because you want people to be able to know that they can come to God the way they choose, that they can celebrate God the way they want, that they don't have to celebrate God. And by having that separation, you don't impose your God on all of us. But guess what? Ms. Gendron doesn't even understand the Constitution, because somehow she thinks that's what freedom of worship is. She gets to worship and you have to follow her worship.
Exactly. And many of her supporters, a few as they may be, don't understand the concept of public service either. So I was a public servant. I was the chief US official in charge of workplace health and safety for some years in the Clinton and G.W. Bush administrations. And to be a public servant is a noble cause. It gives you power over people's lives that you have to exercise responsibly, and you have to understand who you work for. So when I sat on the dais at OSHA, and the public would come to our hearings and line up behind the microphone and say things to me like, "You and your agency are like the Gestapo," which is not a very pleasant thing for a Jewish person to hear. I understood that that was their right because their lives were being affected by what we were doing in their name. So when people say you're bullying Carrie Gendro, these people who are, who got her to not run for select board, and hopefully will get her to either not run or lose her Senate seat, they're bullying her. No, they are the employers, and she has to understand, and everybody has to understand that. With this responsibility and power comes the responsibility to engage with the public. And the wave of so-called public servants who are so haughty with their employers, their constituents, the public, is another thing that we got to flip around.
Well, the other thing that's also interesting is the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about Florida and Florida politics. And I'm mentioning that because it's interesting who the town manager is of Littleton. And I would love to have you sort of comment on that because it was hard for him to leave Florida. But he left Florida for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons why I think he wanted to come to Littleton was that he saw this charming community of 6,000. He saw it open and accepting. He saw that it's a wonderful place to live. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a great place to get a job. And he was all excited about being hired as the town manager. And when he was hired by the select board, of which there were only three, Miss Gendrew said, "God wants you in Littleton." And he's thinking, okay, I thought you hired me. You know what I mean? It was like sort of, but what was more amazing was that obviously when we know that the select person is anti-gay, sees them as an abomination, it was a real problem for Mr. Gleason, who was the town manager, who had left Florida, and his wife of 44 years, who he left as, because she was nearing retirement, said, "Just let me get to retirement," and explain to everyone why he was so offended by some of the language and activity of this select person, because this touched Mr. Gleason personally.
Right. So, and the denouement of the story is he's now back in Florida. He's actually willingly left Littleton, under a cloud, and returned to that other bizarre part of the nation because of what happened to him. So, I've only met him a couple times, Jim Gleason, but he had a son who was gay and who died of, I believe, pancreatitis in his early 30s. And so, to hear about the abomination and this demonic mural and the rainbow. Was obviously distressing to him, but the local theater company, which was going to bring a multi-million dollar grant to the town and now has moved, is probably going to move elsewhere out of this, was putting on La Cage aux Folles, The Birdcage. And Carrie objected to it, and a small number of people objected. And one of the people who objected to the show being done in the Littleton Opera House came in to see Mr. Gleason and left him with the phrase, it's in the paper and I'm not in front of me, something like, "I hope you're happy that your son's burning in hell."
Yeah,
So
I
that
hope
was
you're
the last
happy he's
straw.
in. I hope you're happy he's in hell. That's
So that was the
exactly.
last straw for him, and he had to felt the need to resign and move back to Florida. So not a welcoming place for all, and a sad sidelight to the sad story.
Well, again, I'm going to remind everyone, when we first moved to New Hampshire in 1980, New Hampshire was literally notorious as a libertarian state. Again, remember what libertarian means. You don't trust big government or big church or big church. And I think that the vast majority of people still believe that, okay? I still think there is this libertarian tendency. But what's so scary about the story of Littleton is also what's so scary about state government in New Hampshire, which is also what's so scary about what you're seeing happening in places like Iowa, what you're seeing happening in places like Florida. You don't need a lot of people to believe white Christian nationalism and want to impose fascism, okay? You don't need a lot. But you need certain people in strategic places. And what you saw about this just schism in Littleton, it was caused by the election of this one select woman. Okay? That's what caused it. Suddenly she was seeing, something behind every rock, behind every painting, and she wanted her ideology. She wanted her Christianity to define what was right and what was wrong in Littleton. But Adam, we have a variation on Carrie Gendrew as the Commissioner of Education. We have a guy named Frank Edelblut, who's the commissioner of education, who's Betsy DeVos in pants. And you are seeing a schism happening in community after community, because what is he doing? Well, this was just a select person in a town of 6,000. This is in a state of 1.3 million. And he's using what? He's using education as his bloody shirt. He's using education as his way to impose his Christian nationalist values on all of us.
And again, the same disrespect for truth. He's making up stories, scare stories about, you know, anecdotes that that didn't happen. Look, I love New Hampshire. I worked for 40 years to get to a point where I could move to the state. I worked there in the summers in grad school. And but, you know, libertarianism involves the sense of freedom for all, not just freedom for me and not for thee.
Right.
And it involves, you know, some kind of understanding beyond like the first grade level that our quote always in the world of smart regulation is the wise restraints that make us free. You have to understand that driving on the wrong side of the road is, you know, may get you there faster, but it's not good for the people with whom you share the state or the planet. And we have a little too much sort of cafeteria libertarianism in New Hampshire, and I think not enough understanding that, you know, living free is also, you know, living free from the depredations of others and not letting anarchy run wild. And we have obviously too many anarchists in New Hampshire right now.
And I think what's also interesting about Littleton, it was not only did people coexist, but they thrived. They thrived. And what they saw was the gay community was going to rehabilitate the theater. They saw them bringing in bars. They saw conservatives opening up, you know, auto supply stores. They saw them. I mean, it was like everyone came to the table. And it wasn't that there was this religious litmus test as to whether you had a right to participate, as to whether you had a right to be a public servant, as to whether you had a right on your privately owned building to paint the picture. I mean, you have to see the picture, everyone. There are three photos in the New York Times. There's birches, there's an iris, and then I can't remember what the third one was.
Yeah, the dandelion. I forgot
the dandelion.
Birches,
I mean, I looked at those and I'm thinking, oh, that's nice art. You know, I mean, and everyone, let's also be honest here, Adam. You and I look at a piece of art and we see it through our lens, okay? And our lens doesn't necessarily see the iris as something demonic. We see it as something we grow in our backyard. We don't see the dandelions as something threatening. Frankly, I like to eat dandelions, okay? So I see it as nutritious. So again, part of the problem is that as you view these things, you have to recognize and respect the fact that everyone either appreciates or doesn't appreciate a piece of art. No one's forcing it on you. Avert your eyes.
Yep, and again, I think we're not at the happy ending yet, but Littleton has thrived. It's a wonderful town. It will thrive. It will survive this. It already has survive this. You know, my other agenda, which is it's not going to do as well if 18 million tons of PFAS-laden trash are buried a mile away from the Amanoosuc River in a sand pit, but that's a different story flowing right in through the heart of Littleton. But yeah, we look through it with our own lens. Again, my take on this as a Jewish person is, you know, the rainbow to us is a symbol of Noah's covenant with humanity. And we gladly lent it to the new religion that came about in 33 AD, but we didn't expect it to be so grabby and say, you know, the gays can't have it. It's our symbol. No, it's actually our symbol and it's for everybody.
Well, it's, again, I want people to realize that this story is so important, but the part that still blows my mind, Adam, is that her father was the town moderator for over 50 years. Now recognize that as the town moderator, he did not impose what obviously was his very strict religious views. He's the one, everyone, that encouraged her to go to Bob Jones University. All right. So despite the fact that he had these very fundamentalist views, he actually lived and let live as the moderator. And there was never a sense of threat. And what was so sad about Gleason with his son wanting to come here, look what he's going back to. He's going back to Florida. And Florida, in some ways, is you have a Ron DeSantis who's Carrie Gendro on steroids, you know, and doing to Florida what she tried to do to Littleton. And in the end, it wasn't good for Littleton any more than Ron DeSantis's leadership is going to be good for Florida. It really isn't. The war on abortion, the war on higher education, the war on climate, the war on all these things, it isn't going to create a stable and secure place to live. And that's ultimately what Littleton wants to go back to. And that's what I'm hoping and praying in our second half of the show when we talk about Florida, that Florida figures it out as well. Because in the end, this doesn't mean people thrive. It means people are driven out.
Yeah, and again, I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. I think this was a blip on the radar, and we will get back to thriving. But we have things to overcome.
Absolutely. Adam Finkel is a clinical professor of environmental health sciences at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. He actually spends his time living in two different places, in New Jersey as well as in northern New Hampshire. And we have been following this story about Littleton for a number of months. What was so remarkable was that the New York Times not only followed the story, but shared the story with 3,500 words in today's New York Times. I'm just going to recommend everyone read it. It's not just a story of Littleton. It could be a story of your community. This, everyone, is the Tuesday edition of The Attitude. Stick around. We will be right back.
This is Lincoln Mitchell with today's Mitchell Minute. I do not know how the events at Columbia University will be resolved. At this moment, an administrative building is being occupied. I received a text and an email this morning telling me essentially not to come to campus, and the rest you've all read about. A couple things that strike me. One, I don't support these demands. I don't think Columbia University or any major research university should cut all ties to Israel, particularly academic ties. However, it is very clear to me that unless something dramatic happens, the demonstrators will win their demands. They may not win them this week, this month, before graduation, but over time, the curve is in their direction, not the administrators' direction, and not for the sake of this discussion in Israel's direction. And if Israel wants to change that, and if the universities want to maintain these ties, something has to change within Israel. The direction Israel is going is only going to make the argument for divestment, for cutting ties with Israel, stronger. Again, that's not something I want, but if you ask me where I think this is going, that's my answer. The Mitchell Minute is a daily minute or so of political analysis from me, Professor Lincoln Mitchell. If you want to hear more of my opinion and analysis, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel at Mitchell Minute or subscribe to my Substack, Kibitzing with Lincoln.
When it's 2019, but it feels like 1933. When your eyes are open, when you know the history, when your parents lived through things that looked so much like this, all the indications impossible to miss, when you've sought for your whole life to make the earth a better place, and you once again see the rising of the master race, when you know that they are coming, when they announced it in advance, when you know for many people this will be their last chance, then you may ask the question, what can one person do when the time to act is now? Up to you. When it's 2019, but it feels like 1933, when indefinite detention is the new reality for so many children to whom you did not give birth, when you see they're just as precious as every other child on earth, when they're opening the camps not used since the war, where families were imprisoned decades before, when Kristallnacht is coming, they announced it on the news, when the writing's on the wall, when you can see the fuse, then you may ask the question, what can one person do when the time to act is now? And now it's up to you. When it's 2019, but it feels like 1933, when you know rallies are not helping and silence is complicity, when you know where the kids are kept locked inside their cells, when you see approaching the future this foretells, when they're coming for your neighbors, when they've even said what day they plan to put them all in buses and take them away, when you know where they keep the buses, you've been to the parking lot, perhaps a whole lot of petrol bombs is the best move that you got, then you may ask the question, what can one person do when the time to act is now? And now it's up to you. When it's 2019, but it feels like 1930.
Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, and this is part two of the Tuesday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. Our producers Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. We continue to record on a beautiful Monday morning. Well, Anders Croy is the communication director for Florida Watch and DeSantis Watch. We've been hanging out with him ever since Ron DeSantis had this sort of quixotic desire to run for president and didn't last very long, but that's fine. As a result of DeSantis, as a result of Abbott, as a result of Reynolds in Iowa, there are a group of Republican governors that you can't not stop following, because they are not just setting a tone for their state, they are setting a corrosive tone for the nation. And if you want to understand the divide, you need to go to those states, because they sort of they're like the epicenter of divide. And as I was getting ready to talk to you, Anders, I want to talk to you about the fact that the Florida abortion ban is about to take effect on May 1st. I wanted to talk to you about real estate and how sellers are slashing home prices as inventory surges. I wanted to talk about, you know, the housing insurance problem, which is now being told all over the country. But over the weekend, I mentioned this to you, I was thinking about what's going on college campuses around the country. And of course, I'm 70 years old, so I can remember what happened during the Vietnam War. I can also remember the college campus, you know, upset about what happened with the war in Iraq, okay? And I hate to break it to you, but more often than that, you ever see this sort of uprising on college campuses, they tend to be right. There is a problem here, okay? And usually we're not always picking the right side when it's like, which side should we pick? But I was thinking about Ron DeSantis and how he has behaved. And lo and behold, I find a story in the New York Times from November 16th, 2023. So this is last year, right after what happened in Gaza and what happened in Israel. And here is the headline: ACLU sues DeSantis over crackdown on pro-Palestinian campus group. And I just want to read a couple of sentences, and I promise you we won't go here for very long, but I just wanted everyone to know that everyone is so upset about this anti-Semitism, and look what's happening on Columbia, and look what's happening here. Look how the reaction was of Governor DeSantis, because this happened long before anybody was paying attention. The American Civil Liberties Union and Palestine Legal filed a federal lawsuit Thursday claiming that Ron DeSantis and Florida education officials violated the First Amendment when they ordered the removal of support for Students for Justice in Palestine, a campus activist group. The order affected the group's chapters at the University of Florida and the University of South Florida. The order, which hasn't been carried out just as yet, has already cast a significant chill on the activities of the University of Florida's chapter, causing its board and members to think twice before organizing and advocating for Palestine. Now, I just want to remind everyone, these groups have been around for a long time. They didn't just occur after what happened. They have been around for a while. And notice the reaction. These longtime groups that have organized, they probably either support, they support a two-state solution. They recognize what's been happening, whether it's what's happening with the settlements, you know, in the West Bank, or whether what's happening with Gaza, which has always been called like sort of an almost an open pit, because it's been so difficult to sort of thrive and survive there before Hamas did the horrific events that they did in Israel. But I just want everyone to know that now we are focusing on those bad college presidents and what's happening. Look what Ron DeSantis did literally hours after, to shut down a group that's been in existence for a long time. Why? Because he doesn't agree with that voice, because he doesn't agree with that position, and only his position can be right. So Anders, I apologize for doing this, but I just wanted everyone to know, as we're looking now at what's happening, please go back and look at the history. And isn't it interesting? Ron DeSantis is at the epicenter, you know, and if you want to understand what the GOP and the MAGA are about, they're not about celebrating, you know, and protecting Israel. They're about an agenda, and this is part of their agenda. So Anders, I need to start with this only because one of the biggest stories coming out of Florida is what is happening on May 1st. And we need to sort of start there. And I have a headline in front of me: Florida abortion ban to take effect, cutting off major access points. The state has dozens of clinics that serve tens of thousands of women a year, including from across the Southeast. But the six-week ban will require more to travel much farther. And there's a Kaiser Health news story. There's a New York Times story. Everyone is focusing on this. Can you sort of tell me a little bit about what is the reaction in the state of Florida? And more importantly, that not only do you have the 6-week ban being imposed starting Wednesday, but you also have a referendum on the ballot. And as a result of that referendum, a lot of other interesting things have happened that are not abortion related. I read another story, Anders, that said now every single congressional district has a Democrat that's also filed in there, which gave me the impression that before that, a lot of Republicans would run uncontested. And now the Democrats are realizing, in part because of what's happening on May 1st, in part because of the referendum, that there may be places in Florida that historically were not in play, that in fact could be in play. And if you're not there, you can't play. So I'm really glad to see that the Democrats are participating. So talk a little bit about all these headlines that are now just erupting everywhere because of what's happening May 1.
Well, good morning, Arnie, and thank you for having me on, as always. I think what you're seeing is a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear here in the state of Florida. This is all part of the agenda of politicians like Ron DeSantis, who are attacking the freedom of Floridians to be healthy, prosperous, and safe. Yes. The majority of Floridians believe that all of us deserve the freedom to make personal medical decisions without political interference from politicians. Doctors and nurses shouldn't have to consult with lawyers or fear criminalization for providing the care that patients need. And decisions around pregnancy are personal and unique. They should be left to the patient, their provider, family, faith, and anyone they choose to involve, not politicians. So as you mentioned, May 1st, going into effect will be a near total abortion ban here in the state of Florida. That is due to the fact that the Florida Supreme Court 1 month ago broke with almost 40 years of precedence with a decision that Floridians no longer have a right to medical privacy, which triggered the 6-week ban that was passed by extremist politicians here in the state. As you mentioned, they did this on the same day. They did allow what's going to be Amendment 4, the amendment to limit government interference with abortion, to go onto the ballot. So that is great news, because at the end of the day, in November, Floridians are going to have the opportunity to make their voices known at the ballot box. Now, you mentioned there are Democrats filing in districts all across the state.
Yes.
I think it's important that every race this year be contested because, as I mentioned, the issue of access to abortion is not a partisan one. We know that Republicans, Independents, Democrats all signed the petition to put Amendment 4 on the ballot. Over 1 million Floridians signed that petition. Hundreds of thousands of them we know were Republicans. That's right. From reporting that's been done on publicly available information about the people who signed this amendment. So over the last year in the state of Florida, we have seen those no party affiliated voters, those disaffected Republican voters, come over and make their voices heard, because it's not just the freedom to your medical privacy that's under attack. It's your freedom to live affordably here in the state of Florida, which has to do with abortion as well. We know that women who are denied access to abortion are more likely to end up in poverty, who are going to have issues that affect the long-term health of a family. There are a lot of things that Floridians are going to have the chance to make their voices heard on this fall. And I think you're going to hear folks across the partisan spectrum say enough is enough with the extremism here in the state of Florida, and try to take back their freedom when they go to the ballot box in November.
So let me also sort of connect the dots, because thank you so much for doing that. It is about the size of your family, whether you can afford to live here. My understanding is, did Florida do the expansion of Medicaid or not?
We are one of 10 states that still has not expanded Medicaid, Arnie.
I want, again, when we're talking about, you know, forced incubation and forcing people to have a baby and then denying them access to health care because you didn't expand Medicaid, and then realizing that the cost of housing in Florida is astronomical. And then you look at the cost of house insurance, which is now unaffordable and actually exceeding mortgage payments. You begin to sort of see that what you are doing is you're composting rot, is what you're doing. And DeSantis is really, I think, to a large extent responsible comfortable. But let me just share something with you, because I want you to see something that was on my Facebook page. So one of the things I thought that was fascinating is that we know that the house insurance market has become very unaffordable. You've described this to us ad nauseum every time we talk, every 2 weeks. And so I saw an interesting story and I posted it up on my Facebook page. And it was a story that basically said, here it is, that they looked at the top 10 cities in the country where sellers are likely to slash their prices. Okay, the top 10 in the United States. What was remarkable, everyone, was that as they looked at the top 10 in the US, five of the top 10 are in Florida. Five of the 10. They include Northport, Sarasota, Tampa, Cape Coral, Orlando, Jacksonville. And I was looking at this and I'm thinking, so why are we seeing them slashing prices? Why are people leaving? Why do they want to unload? Obviously, home insurance is a problem, okay? The climate crisis is a problem. What's happening with abortion is a problem. What's happening with the assault on public education is a problem. I mean, when you begin to look at all these things, it's no wonder people are beginning to say, why stay here? LGBTQ. I mean, the assault on that, you know, it's just all these things are happening. But what was so fascinating was I mentioned the abortion issue coming into play on May 1st. And look what one of my commenters put down. This is one of my conservative commenters, of course. And what he said was, well, Arnie, you've got to understand, it's really not an issue in Florida because most people taking up residence are retirees and consumption is no longer an issue. And what I wanted to remind everyone is that those retirees need people under the age of 65 to wipe their butts, to be in their restaurants, to fix their roofs, to clean their houses, to do the landscaping. So even though you know the median age is 42 in Florida, that means that at least half the population has to be under the age of 42. And guess what? For them, conception matters. So again, we have this image of age and Florida. Well, it's no big deal. Who needs an abortion in Florida? Everybody is like old. Well, that's just not the case. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct, Arnie. The thing to understand about Florida's near total abortion ban is not only is it a public health emergency in the state of Florida, it's a public health emergency throughout the South. For many years, women and patients throughout the South have been able to come to Florida because we had the right to privacy established in our Constitution. And while extremist politicians had put in place restrictions like trap laws, ultrasound requirements, two doctor's visits that you had to do before you were able to access the procedure, many patients throughout the South were still able to come here. When this near total abortion ban goes into effect on May 1st, the closest places those patients will be able to go are either Virginia or even further north into Illinois and Michigan and states like that. So that is a huge, huge issue. Now, to get into the other part of that that you mentioned, Florida does have a lot of retirees. We have an older aging population. So what does that mean? It means we have to have a younger service industry-based workforce that can take care of those older folks, who can take care of the tourists who come here, who pay the sales taxes, because as people famously know, we do not have a state income tax here in Florida. The people who provide the services to do those jobs cannot afford Florida. Floridians cannot afford Florida at this point. The data you mentioned there about the top five markets for Florida for places that are slashing housing prices is very interesting, because last year what the data showed is that five of the top 10 most overheated housing markets in the country were in Florida. What you're seeing now are the chickens coming home to roost. You're seeing the results of an economy that is built as a playground for the wealthy, the ultra wealthy, these mega corporations who come here because they want to avoid paying taxes, while the rest of us at the bottom of the bracket are left to pick up the slack. So what has that meant? It's meant that home prices have exploded at a rate that people cannot afford to live where they work. In Miami-Dade County, more than half of renters there are what is known as rent burden, meaning they are paying more than 50% of their income every single month just to afford to put a roof over their and their family's heads. People simply cannot afford it here, because the other issue that is driving a lot of these housing costs are not just the people coming here, are not just the lack, are not just the low wages. It's the property insurance crisis that is driven in part as well by the climate crisis. Florida politicians, Republican politicians for two decades now, have refused to confront the climate crisis head on. And we are seeing the impacts of that in a property insurance market where insurers are leaving the state because they cannot justify the risk to their shareholders of writing policies here. Just last week, Progressive Insurance Corporation announced they are dropping 100,000 more Floridians from their property insurance policies because they're trying to limit their hurricane exposure risk. That is 100,000 Floridians who will no longer have access to property insurance in a market where they're already paying more than four times the national average for property insurance. These are unsustainable levels. And when the only solutions that are coming from Republican leadership, from Ron DeSantis and the Senate president and the House speaker who have taken millions from the insurance industry, is to give that same industry $3 billion in taxpayer money to bail them out, while making it impossible for Floridians to sue them when they refuse to pay the claims that people are entitled to after paying for their policies every single month. You're seeing a situation where people are getting fed up. They're saying, I can't do this anymore. I need a state that respects my freedoms. I need a state where I can make a living. I need a state where I can get the medical care I deserve. And I need a state where my children can get the education that they deserve in order to live a better life and fulfill the American dream that we all want for our families here in this country.
I'm thinking of all these people that are fleeing, that can't afford their home insurance, that are concerned about the climate crisis, that are concerned about what's happening with the assault on public education, with the assault on higher education, and also the idea that, you know, well, no big deal, Florida is such an old place, but as you point out, they need to be served. And therefore, those people that are serving them are not going to be over the age of 65, but they are going to be in their 30s and their 20s. But this is also, I think, a scary thing for Florida. And I'm looking at the age demographic of Florida compared to the rest of the United States. So I was telling you that now you're seeing of the top 10 places where we're slashing prices, five of the top 10 are in Florida. Let me give you another statistic that I'm sure you are very well aware of. The 10 US counties with the highest median age, right, in the United States, seven of them are in Florida. That's not a good news story, everyone, because guess what? As you age faster. And as you age faster, you need more services. And as you need more services, then guess what? If you're going to see, like, you're driving young people out, you're driving families out, they can't find a place to live, they can't decide how they can educate their kids, they don't have control over their bodies, they're not being given expanded Medicaid, you are screwing those old counties, okay? And the oldest county in the country is Sumter, Florida. That county is, the average age in that county is 68.1. Can you tell everyone what's in Sumter, Florida? Because we are actually familiar with a facility or residential community there because it is notorious because of its support for Trump and its GOP politics.
That is the heart of the villages, Arnie.
That's what I thought. The heart of the villages, everyone, is Sumter, Florida. So again, you know, as you look at all these things, anyone who is a governor would care about the fact that they're driving young people out, would care about the fact that you can't have an affordable place to live, would care about what he's doing, for example, with the war on immigration and migrants. Because who's going to pick your oranges? Who's going to work in your agricultural fields? And again, we know there was a crackdown by DeSantis, and we see that. But ask businesses what that means for them, because if we're driving people that are, you know, legitimately or not, you know, uncontested about their status as legally here, think about all the undocumented that are servicing so much of Florida. And now as a result of this, there's an additional target on their back being put there by Ron DeSantis, and the business community knows this, Anders. Where is the business community as they're looking at the insurance problem, as they're looking at the healthcare problem, as they're looking at the worker problem? Are they that quiet?
We have a huge issue here with elder care workers. They're some of the lowest paid people here in the state.
Yes.
And when you have a shortage of elder care workers, that's also because you have a shortage of child care workers. So the people who would maybe take care of the elderly, they don't have anywhere to put their small children every single day and have someone care for them. Now, if their children are old enough to go to school here in the state of Florida, well, guess what? We have a massive teacher shortage. So your kid might go to class and might not have an actual classroom teacher when they get there. These are all things that are intertwined, and they all work together, and they're all creating these issues here in the state that are forcing people to finally take a look at how our economy works and whether or not that is sustainable in the long term. As you mentioned, the business community in Florida knows what the issues are. I'm going to do something that is going to feel completely foreign to me and is going to make me probably not feel good about myself later today. But the Florida Chamber of Commerce has recognized this issue for years. They have actually put out really good position papers about what we can do to help people at the bottom of the ladder who hit what's called the benefits cliff, where mm-hmm. here in the state of Florida, you start making a little too much money. Well, now you don't apply for Section 8. You don't qualify for Section 8 vouchers. Now you've lost Medicaid access. Now you've lost access to a lot of these, to SNAP benefits, things like that. They have recognized that our low-wage workforce is not sustainable here, and we need to be doing more about it. Now, their solutions to that have not been great, but they're at least recognizing it. And they also recognize that the lack of access to healthcare is hurting our workforce. A few years ago, the business community here in the state actually worked with the state Senate to try to pass Medicaid expansion, a version of Medicaid expansion here in the state. Now, it was killed by, at the time, our state House Speaker, a man named Richard Corcoran, who was Ron DeSantis's first education commissioner and is now the president at New College, Florida, here in the state, which we have discussed in the past. But they understand that a healthier workforce is a more productive workforce. And when people have the ability to get the care on the front end that they deserve, that allows them to be more productive when they go to work on the back end. It also allows them to not worry about whether or not they will be able to afford their own medications this month or the new backpack that, or the clothes that their child may need to go to school. These issues are all so intertwined. And I'm glad you talked about this as well, because we have mentioned this before, but there is a movement now to put Medicaid expansion on the ballot in the state of Florida. You can go to floridadecideshealthcare.org. That's floridadecideshealthcare.org. If you're a Floridian listening to this show, please sign the petition. Help get that on the ballot in 2026. If not, please donate to the cause. This is a great movement to try to get this on the ballot and let Floridians have their say to make sure that we are finally getting the benefits that we all deserve when we pay our tax dollars to Washington, D.C., to have them come back here and provide the care that our workers, our seniors, our children need in the state of Florida.
And please connect the dots to the 6-week abortion ban. If you're going to force women to have children, then you must make sure that they have access to healthcare. I am sorry. This is a death watch. It's not a health watch. By not including expansion of Medicaid, you are actually basically aiding and abetting people being harmed medically or even dying.
And I hate to cut you off, but to add to that, it came out last week or 2 weeks ago. Florida right now is the only state in the country that is defying the Biden administration with a rule that they put out that would keep children who have maybe losing coverage due to the expiration of pandemic era public health emergency benefits. Florida has kicked more than 45,000 of those children off of their access to healthcare since the start of this year. They are currently breaking federal law. They are one of only the only state out of 50 that is suing the Biden administration over this rule that would give children in need access to healthcare, that would give their parents the peace of mind that they deserve to know their children are getting the healthcare they need. We are backwards in the way that we are approaching spending tax dollars here in the state of Florida, and it's something that absolutely must change in the future.
We only have a minute left, but you have to mention this one. And it was prosecutors suspended by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis qualified to run in November. I have like my middle finger up in stereo right now, everyone. Remind everyone really quickly about why this I think is just such a fabulous story.
Well, Andrew Warren, who is the duly elected state prosecutor in Hillsborough County, Monique Worrell, the duly elected state attorney in Orange and Osceola County, were suspended by the governor essentially to help his presidential campaign. They exercised their First Amendment rights as duly elected officials to make public comments on issues of importance to the voters who elected them. Ron DeSantis then summarily removed them from office. A panel of federal judges has said that what he did to Andrew Warren in Hillsborough County was illegal. And right now that case is back before the original federal judge who reviewed it to see whether or not State Attorney Warren will actually be reinstated even before the election. So Ron DeSantis essentially put democracy under attack because he does not believe in democracy. Right. He does not believe in our freedoms. And the people of Hillsborough County, the people of Orange and Osceola County, Floridians this fall, both of those candidates have decided to run for re-election.
I love them. Sorry.
And the people will have the opportunity to make their voices heard, to show Ron DeSantis that we still believe in the freedom to vote here in the state of Florida, and that we believe that we deserve the elected officials who we know will best represent us at the local level here in the state, despite what our corporate authoritarian governor may believe?
You know, everyone, pay attention to what Andrews is saying. Andrews is describing what America will be like if Donald Trump is elected in November of 2024. If you want to understand, it's a microcosm. It is a microcosm on every single level, from the war on education, to what's happening with abortion, to what's happening with home insurance, to what's happening with climate crisis denial, to what's, I mean, every single aspect of what's going on in Florida is our future. And Floridians are waking up, thank God. Well, America, you better wake up as well. Anders Croy, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I appreciate it because in a lot of ways, it's what I know, but you just confirm what I know. This is America if we don't change in and ensure that we don't have another Trump presidency. Anders Croy is the communications director for Florida Watch and DeSantis Watch. If it is Tuesday, it must be the attitude. We'll schmooze tomorrow, everyone. Ciao. You change.